Today's podcast is brought to you by Every Wednesday, a plan to inspire the people of Portland and support the place we call home. Let's get out of the house and spend some time with each other. Skip Zoom, meet for coffee, take your colleagues out to happy hour. Buying a gift? Ditch the internet and support a local maker by shopping in-store. Head into town every Wednesday and see what's going on at everywednesdaypdx.com.
Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
This week's Willamette Week cover package is How to Be Cool, a kind of exploration of Portland's youth culture right now, which, despite the times, is surprisingly less grim than one might assume. Now, I got shit in my pantry older than some of these contributors, so rather than try to, relate, I'm talking to my age-appropriate pod homie, Rachel Saslow, whose contribution to the package is Paddles Down, an examination of public school auctions, which, if you don't live in one of the city's posher neighborhoods, you might not know anything about. I certainly didn't. Guess where I live? It's Saturday, May 27th, and this is episode 125 of The Dive. In this week's issue, youth take the reins. They break down what they love about Portland and what they wish would change. They grant us access to their trend reports, and they even let us see a rural spring break through their eyes. But Rachel's piece stands apart. It examines the inequities faced by Portland school-aged kids and how parents having to largely fund their children's public education can deepen those divides. I'll chat with Rachel in just one sec, but first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Aaron Mesh reports that recent election results show a uniform antipathy towards Measure 26-238, never before seen in Multnomah County, or at least since they've started keeping digital records. The measure would have used capital gains to fund eviction defense, and it lost by a whopping 80%. Nigel Jaquist reports that a previously unreported decision by DOJ lawyers has halted the state's aggressive investment in subsidized housing. The state's affordable housing plan for the rest of 2023 included subsidizing 24 new projects, more than 1,700 units. But after an abrupt March edict from the state's attorneys about language in the bond documents used to help fund state-subsidized development, private lenders, crucial to the project, withdrew. The DOJ's sudden shift has baffled experts. And on the back pages, Jason Cohen interviewed Tove Danovich about her new book, Under the Henfluence, which is an inside look at backyard chicken culture. Hensters and henfluencers, check it out. Now let's chat with Rachel about her story, Paddles Down.
So every spring at some schools in Portland, there is a big... Well, sometimes at some schools, they're more modest, but at some schools, there are these pretty lavish auctions where parents go and there's usually a theme, like a costume type thing, and they're pretty boozy. And there's often like a silent auction part and also a live auction part. And this happens at my kid's school. So that's how I kind of knew about it. And it raises money for a school foundation. So Portland is a little bit unique that it has these foundations, which are these nonprofit organizations attached to each school. There isn't one at Woodlawn, so that's probably why you haven't noticed this activity.
Yeah.
But it's separate from the PTA. There's a PTA at every school, mm-hmm. and they can raise money also. But this foundation thing was set up almost 30 years ago to help schools fundraise. And that is the system that we came up with after Measure 5 passed, and nobody really expected it to stick around for this long. And so here we are, and now this is the system that parents are using to raise money for their schools.
What's Measure 5?
So Measure 5 was a law that passed in 1990. It passed in November of 1990. And what it did was it changed the funding model for schools. And so now the state is in charge of the money that goes out to the schools, gotcha, instead of it being like individual neighborhood property taxes. Anyway, it changed things a lot. And schools suddenly in Portland had a lot less money. So the school board set up this foundation model to kind of like help stop it in an emergency type of way. And it just has stuck around for many decades.
What do these options pay for? Do they fund programs? Do they fund staff?
They fund staff, which is sort of one of the big controversial parts of it. So the PTA can fundraise for art supplies. They can fundraise for books. They can fundraise for some programming. But the foundations are really set up to fundraise for staff, but it costs a ton of money to pay for a like a full-time teacher, because that's salary, that's benefits. I mean, it's a pretty, not that teachers are paid as much as they deserve, but it's still, for one school to raise enough money to have, you know, to hire like a fourth grade teacher or something, it costs a lot of money. And so all these, so these schools are putting on these big auctions and doing all these events, and really they're really, you know, some of them are raising enough money for a part-time educational assistant, or to make, at Riki they fundraise to make their part-time art teacher a full-time art teacher. So it's a ton of work to boost the staff.
Who's in charge of the foundations?
Just whatever parent will raise their hand to do it.
Oh, really?
And it is such a heavy lift. Yeah. Like talking, and it talking to these parents who are running these foundations, they are putting in so many hours. I mean, it's really like a part-time job for the year that you volunteer to do this. Mm-hmm. And they put, and to put on an event of that size, I mean, the Alameda auction that I mentioned is a $55,000 event, which is like a couple weddings. I mean, and the amount of planning that goes into that, and the decor and the food. I mean, it's just, I don't particularly like event planning, so to me it sounds like a nightmare way to spend my time. But it's just, it's a really incredible lift for these parents to be putting on these events and to be organizing that amount of money. I mean, some of these schools are bringing in $250,000. I mean, wow, that's a lot of money to be handling. I wouldn't want to be in charge of that amount of money without, I don't know, some sort of background in finance or something.
Right. Is there any kind of like oversight about this money, or it's just on the parents?
That's a great question. There is oversight from the district, because I was talking to a principal who said he had to get a bunch of forms signed to from the district to change how they were going to be spending some of the foundation dollars. So there is some oversight. But it's not like there's an accountant helping you. Yeah. I mean, you have to be in charge of your own spreadsheets and everything. So
how come some schools have foundations and then some schools don't? No, my school doesn't have a foundation.
Sure. So your school could have a foundation if there was a parent who just decided that's what they wanted. You know, the infrastructure is there for any school to take advantage of. Any school can start a foundation. You just need like the parents or community members to support it. And then the foundation doesn't have to have this huge auction. I think that's the thing that's so crazy about this whole world is, you know, some schools, they have an auction, but it's like chill. It's at a pizza place, or it's a more of a community barbecue type of situation. I mean, every school, there are 81 Portland public schools, and they really, in the fundraising realm, this foundation system has really had them like operating in silos. So each school kind of has its own fundraising culture around it, or no fundraising culture at all. And then the parents from those schools would look at these other neighborhoods and be like, what is actually going on at your school? This is so unfamiliar and crazy. Yeah. And it's all in the same district. It's just every school is so, so different. And I think that that's what a lot of people have a problem with.
Yeah, it does. Like, the whole concept of it is so divisive, especially when we're talking about galas that cost $50,000 to throw. Then you've got these other foundations that are doing like the chill auctions. You know, it seems hard to like justify in my mind, like you're trying to raise money, but you're throwing this big expensive party, but that money could have been used to hire a paraeducator or something. Like, I'm just wondering, like, is a big point of division that different schools have different MOs for fundraising? Like, some schools have proven that money can be raised without an attached gala, you know? Is that like the main thing that's making people raise their eyebrows at this or kind of give it a side eye?
I think that the side eye is more that schools are using private money to hire public employees. Mm-hmm. And it just, the auction part is sometimes feels a little tone deaf, you know? I don't know if people are so, I think that the auctions, the events themselves are a little bit tone deaf, but the fundamental problem people have with them is that it's private money being used for public employees, and then the money is not being spread out evenly. It's staying within the building that is raising it, which of course brings in a lot more money. So the reform people are, a lot of them have the idea of moving to a central fund where schools could fundraise, but it would all go to one big pot, which is something that the school, that foundations already have sort of set up, because because if you go to one of these auctions, a third of the money that they raise goes to a central fund called the Fund for PPS, and two thirds the school gets to hang on to. So there actually already is some infrastructure for this, for there being a central fund, but the reform people are saying there should be, all of it should go to a central fund. Mm-hmm. And what some of the foundations are saying is, I don't know if parents are really going to like open their wallets in the same way if it's going to all of the schools, rather than, there's something very satisfying for people when you go to these auctions and you say, we are fundraising for a music teacher or for third grade, which is going to be overloaded next year. And as a parent, you're like, well, I have a third grader next year. I want them to have smaller class sizes. Let me give all this money, because it's such a direct impact to your community and to your own child. And I think that it brings in a lot more money than it would if it was a more diffuse, this is benefiting all the children of Portland, which is sort of a gross thing to like say and know, but it's also human nature. And I think that we should be honest about that.
Yeah. Yes. We're going to put our own kids first, but I get it. Yeah. It is kind of, I want the best for everybody's kids.
Writing this article has made me feel really frustrated that the schools are not just fully funded by the state. Do you know what I mean? It's just, and I said that to board member Julia Brim Edwards, and she has been fighting for more school funding for something like 25 years. Yeah. And I said in the interview, I was like, well, how come the state isn't just fully funding the schools? This is ridiculous. Parents are going versus other parents. Everybody agrees the system isn't really fair or working. And I think she just, in the interview, she was very nice about it. But I think that I am a little bit naive. She's like, yes, Rachel, like that would be the ideal. You know, it's just, she was like, yes, you know, that would be the ideal. These are the things I've been doing for 25 years to get to that point. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, it's such a much bigger problem and such a much bigger issue. That was one of the things that in the article was so interesting, was thinking back to, so I was a kid, I was in elementary school when Measure 5 passed, And I actually remember being a kid, and there's a line in the article that says, like, suddenly kids realized they needed to use their glue sticks down to the nub.
Yeah.
And the textbooks that were ripped had to live to see another year. Those are direct examples from my elementary school classroom. Those are from the 90s. And I just remember as a little kid feeling the shift of, like, when there was money when I was younger, and then suddenly there wasn't as much money, and suddenly all of our supplies were, I noticed it as a kid, and I remember asking the teacher, and I just remember my teacher saying, well, budget cuts, and just feeling like, how come the grownups aren't giving us the money we need for glue and books? And writing this article tapped back into, like, why aren't the grownups giving us money for glue sticks and books? And it mm-hmm. just felt, it makes me so upset as, like, a former Portland Public Schools student, as a now parent of Portland Public Schools students. It just, this stuff cuts really deep. Yeah. I think that the stakes are even higher in the context of low enrollment.
Yeah.
Because if there are fewer children at your school, then your school's bringing in less money mm-hmm. per student. And so then it puts even more pressure on the foundations to raise even more money. So it all kind of, it's all super interconnected.
Yes. And messy and emotional.
Ugh. So messy, so emotional. Gets into really big issues really fast. You're immediately in the world of class. You're immediately in the world of race. You're immediately, I mean, it just, it's this education reporting stuff is wild.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks to this week's guest, Rachel Saslau, and thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then,